Chapter 106. A feature, but you feel, I see, that by a chance which never entered your imagination, this base design is revealed, and two of its plotters must be brought to justice. Now, you know the pains and penalties you are liable to, and so I need not dilate upon them, but I have a proposal to make to you. You have the honor of being sister to one of the greatest scoundrels in Hung, and, if I may venture to say so to a lady, you are in every respect quite worthy of him. But connected with you too is a third party, a villain of the name of Quilp, the prime mover of the whole diabolical device, who I believe to be worse than either. For his sake, Miss Brass, do us the favor to reveal the whole history of this affair. Let me remind you that your doing so, at our instance, will place you in a safe and comfortable position. Your present one is not desirable, and cannot injure your brother, for against him and you we have quite sufficient evidence, as you hear already. I will not say to you that we suggest this course in mercy, for, to tell you the truth, we do not entertain any regard for you, but it is a necessity to which we are reduced, and I recommend it to you as a matter of the very best policy. Time, said Mr. Witherden, pulling out his watch, in a business like this, is exceedingly precious. Favor us with your decision as speedily as possible, ma'am. With a smile upon her face, and looking at each of the three by turns, Miss Brass took two or three more pinches of snuff, and having by this time very little left, traveled round and round the box with her forefinger and thumb, scraping up another. Having disposed of this likewise and put the box carefully in her pocket, she said, I am to accept, or reject at once, am I? Said Mr. Witherden. The charming creature was opening her lips to speak in reply, when the door was hastily opened to, and the head of Sampson Brass was thrust into the room. Excuse me, said the gentleman hastily. Wait a bit. So saying, and quite indifferent to the astonishment his presence occasioned, he crept in, shut the door, kissed his greasy glove as servilely as if it were the dust, and made a most abject bow. Sarah, said Brass, hold your tongue if you please, and let me speak. Gentlemen, if I could express the pleasure it gives me to see three such men in a happy unity of feeling and concord of sentiment, I think you would hardly believe me. But though I am unfortunate, nay, gentlemen, criminal, if we are to use harsh expressions in a company like this, still, I have my feelings like other men. I have heard of a poet who remarked that feelings were the common lot of all. If he could have been a pig, gentlemen, and have uttered that sentiment, he would still have been immortal. If you're not an idiot, said Miss Brass harshly, hold your peace. Sarah, my dear, returned her brother, thank you. But I know what I am about, my love, and will take the liberty of expressing myself accordingly. Mr. Witherden, sir, your handkerchief is hanging out of your pocket, would you allow me to? As Mr. Brass advanced to remedy this accident, the notary shrunk from him with an air of disgust. Brass, who over and above his usual prepossessing qualities, had a scratched face, a green shade over one eye, and a hat grievously crushed, stopped short, and looked round with a pitiful smile. He shuns me, said Sampson, even when I would, as I may say, heap coals of fire upon his head. Well, ah, but I am a falling house, and the rats, if I may be allowed the expression in reference to a gentleman I respect and love beyond everything, fly from me. Gentlemen, regarding your conversation just now, I happened to see my sister on her way here, and, wondering where she could be going to, and being, may I venture to say, naturally of a suspicious turn, followed her. Since then, I have been listening. If you're not mad, interposed Miss Sally, stop there, and say no more. Sarah, my dear, rejoined Brass with undiminished politeness, I thank you kindly, but will still proceed. Mr. Witherden, sir, as we have the honor to be members of the same profession, to say nothing of that other gentleman having been my lodger, and having partaken, as one may say, of the hospitality of my roof, I think you might have given me the refusal of this offer in the first instance.
I do indeed.
Now, my dear sir, apostrophe cried Brass, seeing that the notary was about to interrupt him, suffer me to speak, I beg. Apostrophe, Mr. Witherden was silent, and Brass went on. If you will do me the favor, apostrophe, he said, holding up the green shade, and revealing an eye most horribly discolored, to look at this, you will naturally inquire, in your own minds, how did I get it? If you look from that, to my face, you will wonder what could have been the cause of all these scratches. And if from them to my hat, how it came into the state in which you see it.
Gentlemen, apostrophe said Brass, striking the hat fiercely with his clenched hand, to all these questions I answer Quilp.
Apostrophe, the three gentlemen looked at each other, but said nothing.
I say, apostrophe pursued Brass, glancing aside at his sister, as though he were talking for her information, and speaking with a snarling malignity, in violent contrast to his usual smoothness, that I answer to all these questions, Quilp, who deludes me into his infernal den, and takes a delight in looking on and chuckling while I scorch, and burn, and bruise, and maim myself Quilp, who never once, no never once, in all our communications together, has treated me otherwise than as a dog Quilp, whom I have always hated with my whole heart, but never so much as lately. He gives me the cold shoulder on this very matter, as if he had had nothing to do with it, instead of being the first to propose it. I can't trust him. In one of his howling, raving, blazing humors, I believe he'd let it out, if it was murder, and never think of himself so long as he could terrify me.
Now, apostrophe said Brass, picking up his hat again, and replacing the shade over his eye, and actually crouching down, in the excess of his servility, what does all this lead to?
What should you say it led me to, gentlemen?
Could you guess at all near the mark?
Apostrophe, nobody spoke.
Brass stood smirking for a little while, as if he had propounded some choice conundrum, and then said,
to be short with you, then, it leads me to this. If the truth has come out, as it plainly has in a manner, that there's no standing up against and a very sublime and grand thing is truth, gentlemen, in its way, though like other sublime and grand things, such as thunderstorms and that, we're not always over and above glad to see it, I had better turn upon this man than let this man turn upon me. It's clear to me that I am done for. Therefore, if anybody is to split, I had better be the person, and have the advantage of it.
Sarah, my dear, comparatively speaking, you're safe. I relate these circumstances for my own profit.
Apostrophe, with that, Mr. Brass, in a great hurry, revealed the whole story, bearing as heavily as possible on his amiable employer, and making himself out to be rather a saint-like and holy character, though subject he acknowledged to human weaknesses. He concluded thus,
now, gentlemen, I am not a man who does things by halves. Being in for a penny, I am ready, as the saying is, to be in for a pound. You must do with me what you please, and take me where you please. If you wish to have this in writing, we'll reduce it into manuscript immediately. You will be tender with me, I am sure. I am quite confident you will be tender with me. You are men of honor, and have feeling hearts. I yielded from necessity to Quilp, for though necessity has no law, she has her lawyers. I yield to you from necessity too, from policy besides, and because of feelings that have been a pretty long time working within me.
Punish Quilp, gentlemen. Weigh heavily upon him. Grind him down. Tread him underfoot. He has done as much by me, for many and many a day.
Apostrophe, having now arrived at the conclusion of his discourse, Samson checked the current of his wrath, kissed his glove again, and smiled as only parasites and cowards can.
And this, apostrophe said Miss Brass, raising her head, with which she had hitherto sat resting on her hands, and surveying him from head to foot with a bitter sneer, this is my brother, is it? This is my brother, that I have worked and toiled for, and believed to have had something of the man in him. Apostrophe, apostrophe, Sarah, my dear, apostrophe, returned Samson, rubbing his hands feebly, you disturb our friends. Besides, you are disappointed, Sarah, and, not knowing what you say, expose yourself. Apostrophe, yes, you pitiful dastard, apostrophe, retorted the lovely damsel, I understand you. You feared that I should be beforehand with you. But do you think that I would have been enticed to say a word? I'd have scorned it if they had tried and tempted me for 20 years. Apostrophe, hee. Apostrophe, apostrophe, simpered Brass, who, in his deep debasement, really seemed to have changed sexes with his sister, and to have made over to her any spark of manliness he might have possessed. You think so, Sarah, you think so perhaps, but you would have acted quite different, my good fellow. You will not have forgotten that it was a maxim with Foxy, our revered father, gentlemen always suspect everybody. That's the maxim to go through life with. If you were not actually about to purchase your own safety when I showed myself, I suspect you'd have done it by this time. And therefore I've done it myself, and spared you the trouble as well as the shame. The shame, gentlemen, apostrophe added Brass, allowing himself to be slightly overcome, if there is any, is mine. It's better that a female should be spared it. Apostrophe, with deference to the better opinion of Mr. Brass, and more particularly to the authority of his great ancestor, it may be doubted, with humility, whether the elevating principle laid down by the latter gentleman, and acted upon by his descendant, is always a prudent one, or attended in practice with the desired results. This is, beyond question, a bold and presumptuous doubt, inasmuch as many distinguished characters, called men of the world, long-headed customers, knowing dogs, shrewd fellows, capital hands at business, and the like, have made, and do daily make, this axiom their polar star and compass. Still, the doubt may be gently insinuated. And in illustration it may be observed, that if Mr. Brass, not being over suspicious, had, without prying and listening, left his sister to manage the conference on their joint behalf, or prying and listening, had not been in such a mighty hurry, to anticipate her which he would not have been, but for his distrust and jealousy, he would probably have found himself much better off in the end. Thus, it will always happen that these men of the world, who go through it in armor, defend themselves from quite as much good as evil, to say nothing of the inconvenience and absurdity of mounting guard with a microscope at all times, and of wearing a coat of mail on the most innocent occasions. The three gentlemen spoke together apart for a few moments. At the end of their consultation, which was very brief, the notary pointed to the writing materials on the table, and informed Mr. Brass, that if he wished to make any statement in writing, he had the opportunity of doing so. At the same time he felt bound to tell him, that they would require his attendance, presently, before a justice of the peace, and that in what he did or said, he was guided entirely by his own discretion. Gentlemen, apostrophe said Brass, drawing off his glove, and crawling in spirit upon the ground before them, I will justify the tenderness with which I know I shall be treated, and as, without tenderness, I should, now that this discovery has been made, stand in the worst position of the three, you may depend upon it, I will make a clean breast. Mr. Witherden, sir, a kind of faintness is upon my spirits, if you would do me the favor to ring the bell and order up a glass of something warm and spicy, I shall, notwithstanding what has passed, have a melancholy pleasure in drinking your good health. I had hoped, apostrophe said Brass, looking round with a mournful smile, to have seen you three gentlemen, one day or another, with your legs under the mahogany in my humble parlor in the Marks. But hopes are fleeting. Dear me. Apostrophe, Mr. Brass found himself so exceedingly affected at this point that he could say or do nothing more until some refreshment arrived. Having partaken of it pretty freely for one in his agitated state, he sat down to write. The lovely Sarah, now with her arms folded, and now with her hands clasped behind her, paced the room with manly strides, while her brother was thus employed, and sometimes stopped to pull out her snuff-box and bite the lid. She continued to pace up and down until she was quite tired, and then fell asleep on a chair near the door. It has been since supposed, with some reason, that this slumber was a sham or feint, as she contrived to slip away unobserved in the dusk of the afternoon. Whether this was an intentional and waking departure, or a somnambulistic leave-taking and walking in her sleep, may remain a subject of contention. But, on one point, and indeed the main one, all parties are agreed. In whatever state she walked away, she certainly did not walk back again. Mention having been made of the dusk of the afternoon, it will be inferred that Mr. Brass's task occupied some time in the completion. It was not finished until evening, but, being done at last, that worthy person and the three friends adjourned in a hackney coach to the private office of a justice, who, giving Mr. Brass a warm reception and detaining him in a secure place, that he might ensure to himself the pleasure of seeing him on the morrow, dismissed the others with the cheering assurance that a warrant could not fail to be granted next day for the apprehension of Mr. Quilp, and that a proper application and statement of all the circumstances to the Secretary of State, who was fortunately in town, would no doubt procure Kit's free pardon and liberation without delay. And now, indeed, it seemed that Quilp's malignant career was drawing to a close, and that retribution, which often travels slowly, especially when heaviest had tracked his footsteps with a sure and certain scent, and was gaining on him fast. Unmindful of her stealthy tread, her victim holds his course in fancied triumph. Still at his heels she comes, and once afoot, is never turned aside. Their business ended, the three gentlemen hastened back to the lodgings of Mr. Swiveller, whom they found progressing so favorably in his recovery as to have been able to sit up for half an hour, and to have conversed with cheerfulness. Mrs. Garland had gone home some time since, but Mr. Abel was still sitting with him. After telling him all they had done, the two Mr. Garlands and the single gentleman, as if by some previous understanding, took their leaves for the night, leaving the invalid alone with the notary and the small servant. "As you are so much better," apostrophe said Mr. Witherden, "sitting down at the bedside, I may venture to communicate to you a piece of news which has come to me professionally." Apostrophe, the idea of any professional intelligence from a gentleman connected with legal matters, appeared to afford Richard anything but a pleasing anticipation. Perhaps he connected it in his own mind with one or two outstanding accounts, in reference to which he had already received divers threatening letters. His countenance fell as he replied, "Certainly, sir. I hope it's not anything of a very disagreeable nature, though. Apostrophe, apostrophe, if I thought it so, I should choose some better time for Gutenberg edition." End of chapter.